and welcome to another episode of All Tomorrow's Festivals, the content series exploring how the Edinburgh Festivals in the summer of 2025 show us signals around what's coming next in the world of arts and culture and much beyond. I am Nick Sherrod, MD of Label Sessions and a slightly reluctant futurist. I'm also joined by our content producer, Josh Nixon.
Hello.
Josh, this was a conversation you had, interview you ran with Claire Gilbert, who is a producer, and this year is, in particular, the producer of Bury the Hatchet, which is a show by Out of the Forest Theatre. And to get the key mechanics out for everybody, is on at 10 to 4, so 3:50 every day in the Pleasance Dome, in the Queen Dome. An hour and 10 minutes, just actually also for those of you that are planning a day at the festival, an hour and 10 minutes a show rather than the normal hour. But also a kind of really interesting story, like lots of the shows we're covering, Josh, but also again another one with quite political themes.
Yeah, so this one really stood out to me because I'm a true crime kind of guy, and this is one of the first sort of quote-unquote unsolved cases in America that's sort of captured within the 20th century, or just on the verge of the 20th century. And one of the things that I was fascinated by this is that it doesn't just engage in the true crime aspect of just like this is what the murder side of things, but it also covers a bit of what happened in the aftermath. So the sort of media circus that went around the case, and how, you know, Lizzie Borden, who was at the center of all this, went on with her life afterwards, and how the thing sort of floated with her throughout the rest of her days.
Really, really interesting. So it's kind of in the bio of the show, the blurb of the show, it says, fuses gallows humor and vaudevillian horror, is winner of the Off West End Award for Best Ensemble, or the theatre company are, rather. So a kind of really interesting production. It was interesting. A few years ago, there was quite a lot of kind of true crime shows on the fringe in particular. There's fewer this time, but this maybe is quite an unusual take on it that also kind of plays into a bit of that. Those themes are picking up a lot around the kind of vaudeville element, or talking about quite dark things in a quite, well, entertaining way, but also kind of leaning into the vaudeville a bit.
Yeah, and it was quite nice to sort of take the scope out a little bit more wider than the show too, towards the back half of the interview. We're talking about some of the work that Claire's done outside of part of the Forest Theatre. She works with another company called Besna Theatre, and it was interesting to hear a little bit more of the sort of political stuff that she does with them.
Excellent. Well, let's head in. We'll go into the interview now, and then we'll just say a few words at the end.
Claire, thank you so much for taking time to join me today. I know you're really busy. I'd love for you just to walk through a little bit about what to expect, what audiences can expect from Bury the Hatchet.
Oh, absolutely. So Bury the Hatchet is an acting musician ensemble show. So there's three performers that explore the 1892 case of Lizzie Borden. So it sets a bluegrass music, vaudevillian horror, and it's, yeah, and 70 minutes fly through of the court case, but also the hysteria that surrounded Lizzie as a woman in the 1890s who didn't quite fit the stereotypes. So expect music, expect a bit of horror, expect fun and actually a bit of laughter and comedy, and yeah, expect the unexpected. No, that's too cheesy. That's too much. No, it is. Yeah, it's yeah, true crime on stage. It's a little bit of a podcast kind of, yeah, unsolved mystery that we're exploring.
Brilliant. And like, I'm already on a tangent here, but I was curious about this because I was reading a lot about the press release and like all of the descriptions and things like that. How, I know obviously a big part of it is going to be focused on the actual case and investigation itself, but does any of it go into like some of a later life, or maybe what happens in the aftermath? Because I was fascinated by like how she was vilified, obviously, and it continued to follow her for the rest of her days, even to the point where she, when she changed her name, it still wasn't enough.
Yeah. Oh, no, we absolutely, it's not a courtroom drama. So don't come if you're expecting, you know, the one room, one shot drama. It's not that. Yeah, we absolutely look at that, because also we're really interested in why we're still talking about this case from the 1890s in Fall River, Massachusetts, and what is the fixation with true crime, and then what happens next. And because she's kind of the first, you know, mad, bad and dangerous to know female icon in the tabloids, it really does persevere and continue. So yeah, and we also look at the impacts on her family, on her sister, on her friendships, and that's all kind of, yeah, feeds into the show and gives kind of context to it. Yeah, and also I think is the lens in which we are then using it to talk about today, because I think also sometimes the aftermath of what happens next and when people are deemed either guilty before they're innocent or, you know, should be innocent before guilty. And yeah, how that in the media plays out is definitely of interest to us as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's played out several times since. There's been a few other cases that are obviously quite similar. There's obviously, you know, huge ones that come to mind. But I'd love to, you've already delved into it a little bit there, but I'd love for you to delve in a little bit more into, you know, why now is the story so important to tell in a bit more detail, but also why to tell it in Edinburgh at the Fringe?
Yeah. First off, we love the Fringe. We were there in 2023 with The Brief Life and Mysterious Death of Boris III, King of Bulgaria, and had a great time at Pleasance Queen Dome, and have always wanted to bring work back. The audiences are amazing. It's a wonderful space to be around other artists and interesting companies making work. And it's also a great way of really seeing if your work lands and flies. But specifically, why now? Well, August is also a great month because August the 4th is the date of the murder. And so audiences will actually be seeing it kind of over 100 years on from the event. So that's quite fun. So you can come join us. But also, I think why now it's really interesting to us is that as female theatre makers, as women working in the industry, there is an erosion of rights that exist. And the role of the media is becoming quite skewed. And I think we're seeing it really play out in America right now. And the writer of the piece and one of the performers, Sasha, is also American. And I think it feels very close to home that even since we did the first iteration of it way back in 2018, we've had things like Amber Heard, Britney's come back to the forefront, and we're all kind of obsessed. You know, the true crime podcast has really exploded in kind of interest, and there are so many cop dramas on TV, and I think it's a commentary on today and why we're so fixated with that sort of crime. So it feels now is absolutely the right moment to be kind of sharing the show and inviting audiences to join us in that.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic answer, and it completely slipped my mind that it is almost going to be, well, an anniversary time for it. Yeah, that didn't ever cross my mind, which is awesome.
Yeah, I know, it's really fun. It's like, yeah, because there's moments in the show where they go on August 4th, and we just know that the audience is suddenly, and half of them I'm sure will be aware, and half of them will go, oh, is this, or go, and they've just changed the line so that it's the date of the show, and you're like, no, it's always August 4th. So that'll be quite fun.
So yeah, to tell me a little bit more about how this came to be, because obviously, you know, this is the first time that you bring this to the Fringe, if I'm correct, and it's obviously, you know, you've explained a lot about why now, but a little bit more about the process would be great to hear.
Yes, so we're going to go all the way back to 2017, which really truly does feel like the land before time. We were doing some Vox Pop recording for social media, and I was like, oh yeah, just over 5 years ago. And the writer corrected me and was like, it was eight years ago. So that's wild. So yes, back in 2017, Sasha was freshly out of drama school and was looking around at opportunities, and was actually approached by a peer going, I want to do a double bill night, of which I want to share some new work and what are you interested in making. And 2017 is the year of Me Too, and it's kind of was a real moment for that sort of history. And Sasha is from Boston, Massachusetts. And so Lizzie Borden had always been floating around for her. And so 2017, she makes 20 minutes of the show, of which I go and see it because classic in theatre, you've got a friend of a friend who's doing a thing. And I think, oh, this is quite great. And then I go freelance and I approach Sasha again and I go, hey, I really enjoyed that 20 minutes. And she goes, funnily enough, I thought that 20 minutes was great too. And has developed it into an hour-long show and was performing it at Vault Festival, which sadly is now defunct. But back at Vault Festival where we had the most amazing time, won an Audience Choice Award, which then meant that we went to the Hope Theatre where we won Best Ensemble at the Off West End Awards, which was incredible. And then the show went on a small kind of American tour around some venues in Arizona, one of which was to Rosson House, which is this amazing venue that existed. We then kind of parked it for a small amount of time as we then made other shows. So King Boris III of Bulgaria, which we discussed, which was made by the company's other founder, Joe, as well as Sasha. But we also made a piece of theatre about Louisa May Alcott and Little Women, and also on witchcraft and readdressing the balance between who gets to tell stories around witchcraft. And it felt like a nice moment to return to it, because it feels like it's a conversation that should be being had. And also it's just a really great show. And yeah. Now we feel ready to bring it to a bigger stage, to bigger audiences. We've learned a lot, and it just feels very exciting to come back to it kind of full circle. So yeah, it's been updated. So if anyone listening saw it way back when, there'll be some numbers that you recognize, but hopefully you'll go, oh, this is the elevated version.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I wasn't aware that it was such a long gestation period for it. And it's always great to hear when, you know, you think this maybe isn't the right time for it now, but you can always come back to it. It's always nice to hear stories like that.
And it's also such a classic story, right? Yes. Like, it is still interesting, and we do still return to it, and we do still think about it. So I also think that's why now makes sense too.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And, you know, this is a question when it comes to true crime. This is a question I ask everybody when, like, even if it's just me chatting to some friends, is like, what is it that you think about just the morbid curiosity of true crime that brings people just so I don't even know why I'm so fascinated, to be perfectly honest with you, but there's just that sort of macabre element that everyone's just sort of drawn in. It's like a little bit of a lean forward moment, you know?
Yeah. And it's the what would you do? How would you react? Would it be the same if you were in the jury, if you were in that house with the locked doors, if your pet pigeons had suddenly been killed, if you were in sweltering 30 degree heat in a, you know, fit period gown, would you also lose your, you know, sense of right and wrong or not? And how does justice prevail or not prevail? And I think lots of it is also our fascination on the other and on the extremes of humanity. Yeah. And that's also what we explore in Bury the Hatchet, is perhaps Lizzie just didn't conform to what a woman in the 1890s was supposed to do for a variety of reasons. And perhaps that's why she becomes the scapegoat and is so sensationalized. So, yeah, it is one of those things that also we really look at in the show and ask questions ever so gently off of the audience and ourselves. It's as true of us as it is of the audience, and we're very honest and upfront about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the part where I like to sort of open it up about the sort of wider scope of festivals and live performances. Like, you as a producer outside of Bury the Hatchet have worked in the industry for a little while as a producer. So there's the Besner Theatre. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing that wrong.
No.
So you've had some skin in this game for a little while now, so I'd love to think about or talk about, you know, what is it that's exciting you right now when it comes to the realm of live performance and sort of fear?
Besner Theatre is a political Romanian organization that makes work that challenges societal violences. So alongside Bury the Hatchet and Out of the Forest, I also run Besner. I also work with a Bulgarian artist named Laura Krastova, who makes political work, and freelance and run my own company to put things through. So yeah, making work right now I think is just necessary. I think there's a reason why we still tell stories, and it's why it's persevered for 2000 years. No matter what medium has come along and new technology, there is something incredible about being in a room with people and sharing that emotion and communication and learning new things or being reminded of things or feeling things. And there are so many ways that you can do that can both be entertaining and powerful and impactful, and it feels as though that is the place to be. I mean, it's not perfect, no industry is right now, and there are gatekeepers and there are pressures and the world is a bit in fire, but also if humanity is going to continue, empathy is where it's at, and we're better to do that than by sharing stories and hopefully having a conversation that moves us forward.
That's great. And to maybe lean into a little bit more of the bin fire side of things, this is a terrible story, is, you know, for every positive comes a negative. Like, is there anything that is a danger to the art form right now, do you feel?
Oh, where to start? Censorship. We talked about funding in an opener, capitalism, gender politics, you name it. that everything is at a point of crisis. Like, everyone is struggling, everything is shit, everything is hard. But I say that with a caveat that goes, art is a human right, and there is a reason why we as a collective have agreed that across nationalities, across borders, and that is because it does something powerful, and you don't always need all of the resources to be able to tell a wonderful story. And that's also partly out of the forest's kind of vibe, is you could just pick up an instrument and tell this. Yes, it's wonderful that we've got incredible lighting design, wonderful stage and setting, a brilliant team around us, but it comes from the drive of wanting to tell a good story, entertain, and perhaps help you feel something along the way. But yeah, it's amazing the lines that you sit and cross and the conversations that you have in the world as it's making. But you know, we sit in a very skewed specific bubble as well, so that's when it's then interesting, is when you then leave that bubble and go, what do you think? What are you in? So yeah, and yeah, especially post-Brexit, next year will be 10 years since the Brexit vote, which feeling very acutely considering that most of the artists I work with are first generation migrant, including running out of the forest, Besna, and working with Laura, and with the kind of increase in racist xenophobia that is prevailing. Some theatres are being quite bold with their programming, and some I think are being quite conservative, but I also think audiences are being conservative. People want to be entertained, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it then means where is the space for conversation and nuance and experience?
And not a theory of getting too political, but yeah, that's the 10 years, it still stings.
Oh, stings. Yeah. At every point, like today, as we record this podcast, they have announced that within the visa of it, special performance, they have removed a whole host of artistic jobs that are not considered specialists. And it's just wild where you're going, on the one hand, you're talking about mobilization of under 35s between European countries, which is great. And then on the other hand, you're going, but we're not going to recognize the work that you do, and we're not going to consider you an industry, even though there are billions. Like, if we do want to talk in capital terms, because we live in a capitalist society, that is what we do for the country. And it's just baffling. So, yeah, don't let me get on my high horse of politics, or something. Stop.
No, I'm in complete agreement with you. It's a baffling practice, and it just feels like a continual game of catch 22. There's just no winning to be had. For every step forward, there's always a step back or two.
Yeah, yeah. Although what I would say, I've been in a few spaces recently where people have gone, "What's the point in protest? What is the point in resistance? And what is the point in these conversations?" And actually, there are wins that people don't always necessarily see, or that aren't the big, sexy things that, or the big end goal that we want, but they're steps in the right direction. It might be that there are sanctions, or a company removes its funding, or, for example, Besna took part in a protest performance in the streets, and an arms company then didn't send arms to Israel. There's a whole host of ways in which you can choose to frame that and go, but I as the individual still have a responsibility, and I as the individual can still have an impact, because we become the mass. You know, it's like the bug's life.
Yeah.
You know, you can squash one ant and that's fine, but if all the ants stand up, I'm a big fan.
Well, it's like there's the just the like sort of political apathy is a problem in its own right, because, like, you know, people always say, what's my vote going to count for? And it's like, well, you and millions of other people feel that way too. It adds up.
Yeah.
Bug's life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You swing it. And then you see the elections where, you know, 20 votes move. I think it'll be really interesting with 16 to 18 year olds voting and what that means in the future. That would be fascinating, the impact of that and the ricochet that happens, you know, new political parties being potentially formed and what shape they will take in whatever form that is. So yeah, I do think there's conversation, and that's also where I think good to great theatre exists, is that you can go have a fantastic time. Like, the music numbers are absolutely banging in Bury the Hatchet. Like, you're going to come out humming and enjoying it. And Sasha calls it a Trojan horse. That also, like, the politics are in there. At the end of the day, you're having a great night out, or an afternoon out in Edinburgh. But at the same time, what we're talking about is important and matters. So I think that's where, yeah, you can bring a little bit of the apathy along and go, well, you could talk about that. You could look at the media in a critical way. You could look at propaganda and a certain means and where you get your news from. So, yeah.
It's all too easy to come with a cynical mind, but it's a case of you can have a great time, but you can also think at the same time, you know?
Yeah. And I am a sickening optimist. Like, please know that I am one of those disgusting... Yes, it is relentless, and yes, it's horrible, but I do think that the hope of the darkness is where we aim for. Bit of a difference in there. But yeah, if you don't aim towards that, that does become very relentless and very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you also just have to have fun. You have to bring joy. And that in itself can be a resistance too, is to be present and to continue and to not be erased. Matters.
Spot on. Spot on. And as a final thing that I have for you is, you know, the show is on at 4:15, if I'm correct. Or is it? No, it's 10 to 5.
3:50. Yeah.
3:50. 3:50. Sorry. 3:50.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll scrub that part out. I was close.
Yeah. You can see the show at 3:50 p.m. at the Pleasance Queen Dome every day, apart from possible.
You know, I literally just read it. Like, I literally just read it 50 minutes ago just to confirm it, and it went through my head. So 3:50.
Oh, please don't worry.
3:50 in the Queen Dome at the Pleasance.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know how much of a I don't know how, what you are as a what you're like as a person where if you're waiting for that one thing, you can't do anything either side, or wait until you have to do it afterwards. But is there anything else that you're looking forward to in August this year when you're here for the show?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, don't worry. I've still got a whole schedule of things that I'm really excited about. And in fact, you interviewed one of the shows that I was really excited to see. Yeah, the Midnight at the Palace. It just sounds so great and up our street. So we're all heading across to there. And so what else am I excited for? I Was a German by Claire Frankel. I am slightly biased because she was a performer in The Brief Life and Serious Death of Boris III, King of Bulgaria, and is bringing her one-woman show about her German identity as a Jewish woman and how that feels, claiming it from like her grandparents' era who fled to Germany. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I've seen some like projection images, and that was really cool. There's a company called Fish in a Dress, great company name, who have a show also at Pleasance, which is on earlier in the afternoon, which is 1:35, I think. And they have a show about kind of insanity and hysteria and women in the kind of 1800s as well. So that feels very exciting and cool. And that's made by a really interesting collective who, yeah, make really interesting work. So I'm really interested in that. So yeah, there's lots of things. There's a Brazilian flamenco show I want to go and see.
Oh my God.
I'm not sure I'll have time. I know. it's all that sort of stuff where you go. For me, when I go, when I go as a punter, it's different to when I go up as a producer. So some of the things that I will be seeing this year are to support Bury the Hatchet, because then it means that I can go to my team and go, you should see this. This is great. These values align with us. We should do some culture flyering.
Yeah.
So in 2023, I think I saw exclusively shows that were set in World War II or related to World War II. And I had nothing to recommend. Whereas this year, it's much more exciting. When I got the weird stuff, the weird and wonderful.
Yeah, I was going to say, and this is probably a little bit of an obvious question, but like, do you have a difficult time taking off the producer hat when you go to see shows, or do you find it really easy to just be like, this is, I'm here for the show, don't you think about it too much?
Yeah, I can suspend my disbelief like there's no tomorrow. Once that doors close or the curtain goes up, I am your most active audience member. I am present. I love it. I will laugh, I will cry, I'm in it. I just love theatre. And I always think that even if you see something, inadvertent commas, bad, there will be something out of it that you can take. And whether it's one of the performers was great, or there was this moment of magic, or it was an interesting premise, but it's not how you would approach it. So how would you approach it differently? As long as it's not offensive. Offensive things are just dismissed in my mind. But I think... for other things that just might not be to your taste or to like the quality of it, I think it's always a worthwhile endeavor. So no, I fully enjoy it and can let go. I think it's harder if you're in an overtly creative role. I think it's much easier to compare and contrast and go, well, I would have scripted that, or I'd have performed it differently. But as a producer, I want to be entertaining. I want to love it. I want it to be great. And so I always go in with that mindset.
No, that's, I mean, that goes back to what you're saying, that you're a wildly optimistic person, but that's a great attitude and a great mindset to have, because, like, you know, as someone who's like a little bit of a filmmaker in the past, it's very much easy to be like, ooh, that edit. Yeah, you're right. Like, ooh, that script, ooh, that edit, oh, that. It's so easy to be a nitpicker and it's so easy to be a cynic. But yeah, you're right. Optimism is really king for these things.
Yeah, and I just think life is too short. My personal belief is that I only have one, and so I'm going to live it to the best and the fullest that I can. And that means I'm going to live my values and I'm going to practice them and I'm going to talk about them. Hence why politics comes up a lot of the time. But also that means that I'm going to go in hoping and aiming for the best time possible.
That's amazing. And that's a wonderful and optimistic note to end our podcast about a show about double murder.
Yeah, I know. But it goes to show, do you know what? If you come see the show, you'll feel some of those same notes. It's not all doom and gloom. It's not a negative, although there's some vaudevillian horror and a little bit of the grotesque. It is also just a bang in time that you will be entertained. I promise. You can hold me to it. If you listen to this podcast and then go see the show and decide otherwise, send us an email at info@outoftheforestthis.com.
That's about as formal of a pinky promise as you can get. So thank you so much for your time, Claire.
No, thank you. Really enjoy it. And yeah, enjoy the fringe.
Good. So that was Claire Gilbert. That's the conversation, really interesting conversation. The show that she's mostly talking about in that interview is Bury the Hatchet, which is on at 3:50 every day at the Pleasance Dome in the Queen Dome. Like you're saying, Josh, it's kind of an interesting conversation on that show, plus theatre making now, and political theatre making now, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. So, because like a lot of the people who we interview are typically the writers, the creators themselves. They have a lot to say in terms of the actual creative process, but it's nice to hear a little bit more about the sort of the actual logistics of putting on a show and the logistics of sort of work, making these things work in the world that we live in now.
So we are just drawing together the conclusions in this whole research project as well. We'll be coming in some episodes soon, but there's loads of really interesting episodes wherever you found this podcast, loads of really interesting artists and performers and producers and festival organizers and leaders to hear the interviews from. So do have a hunt around. But you can find out more about All Tomorrow's Festivals on any of our social handles or if you go to labelsessions.com. But for now, thanks very much for listening. See you next time.